Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Teresa Kapenda, who's the Zambian coordinator of Living Compassion's Africa Vulnerable Children Project, and Jen Colmore, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Teresa and Jen.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Great. Teresa, how is it going so far in the United States?
I'm doing great. I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Does anything in particular stand out for you?
Plenty. There's plenty to talk about, Michael.
Uh-huh. Great. Anything you want to highlight for us?
I've seen the big trees.
You've seen the big trees? Great.
Yes, and I saw the most spectacular, wonderful landscapes I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen in my life.
Wow. Wow, that's very exciting.
Michael, sure. we should definitely underline a little commercial for our part of California here that the big trees that Teresa's talking about, of course, are the Calaveras red tree, redwoods. And they're huge, gigantic. I mean, and they're spectacular for people who have lived in the United States all their lives. I've had people who have come out to visit, and I've taken them up there, and they're just stunned, the beauty of those trees. So that's worth a visit out here just for those.
Yes, it is. I've seen them myself, and they're really spectacular. Great.
And the other thing is I'm enjoying myself. The quietness here at the monastery is just so great. I have time to myself. I read a lot the past few days.
Great. It is very beautiful, isn't it?
Very, very unique.
Yes, wonderful. I love the quiet also. Teresa and Jen, I understand that there have been some conversations about community that have been going on both in Cantalamba and over here. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, it's true. We did start the conversations before we got back to the United States when we were still in Cantalamba, and really seeing the rare opportunity that it is to have Teresa here with us is an opportunity to bring the two communities on either side of this project kind of more together. In many senses, we've been one community all the way along, and folks here in the U.S. and other parts of the world get to follow along with things that are happening via the blog, and then we go back to Cantalamba and we tell people about folks back here who are following, and we give them inspiring stories of all the fundraisers that have happened and that kind of thing. So there's always an exchange of information, but having Teresa here is really a unique opportunity to be able to have people kind of in the energy of it, if you will. We were talking a little while ago with Teresa, and she was telling us an extraordinary story about the effect that the work of Living Compassion is having in the community of Cantalamba that we hadn't realized before. And I think she was going to tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, wonderful.
Living Compassion has done a lot for the community of Cantalamba, in particularly the women whom I work with. Judging from experience of what I've seen so far, these women, it's like they had a void. They knew nothing about life or outside life of Cantalamba or outside of Undola. Now, Living Compassion coming in, it's like, let me give you an example of an empty bottle. That's how their minds were, and they were filled with emptiness. Now that Living Compassion has come in, it's like they've put something in their head to just have that feeling of, let me say, someone who has a sense of things like, I'm supposed to do this, I'm supposed to go from point A to point B. Unlike in the olden days before Living Compassion was there, everyone was stuck at point A. It was just like that. No one had that chance of moving from point A to point B. Now Living Compassion has brought that thing that people have started growing up in their minds, like Living Compassion is enriching them to remove that blindness that they had.
So what was so interesting, Michael, when we were talking about this is that what I got in the conversation with Teresa is that she's talking about hope. She's talking about a sense of future.
Yes.
That for people who, you know, the life expectancy in Zambia is somewhere in the 30s. And so for people who have no hope of a future, essentially, I mean, from what Teresa was describing, they give up. Teresa, tell us the story about Violet, the work that Violet did and what her daughter saw in her.
Violet is one of the members of the Living Compassion team. Before Violet came to Living Compassion, she was someone who went out into the forest to collect firewood and sell that firewood. She would carry it on her head, and that's her way of life all along because it was done by her mother. She did it, and she passed it on to her daughters. And when Living Compassion adopted her to work for the project, everything around her changed. Her daughters saw the meaning of not going into the bush to collect firewood. She has teenage daughters, some of them who are married. That's their way of living. That's the way they were doing it, collecting firewood, selling the firewood, and that was that. And when they saw that their mom, Violet is an old lady, she's about 60, saw that their mom was doing something in her life, it prompted them to go out and look for work. As I speak right now, two of our daughters, one of them is working on a farm, a flower farm, and the other one is working in a bakery, just cleaning up the supplies and everything. It just takes someone, or let me say, it took Living Compassion to see the light in Violet's life so that the children would respond to what she's doing.
Yeah, I get the sense that Violet saw that somebody cared. And that's what I'm projecting onto it. Somebody cares, and we find that possibility within ourselves to make the difference that's possible.
That's true, Michael. Possibility can do it.
Yeah. And for us, it was so moving to hear those stories because what we realized is there's such a parallel to the community here. So no, Living Compassion is not directly employing or really doing much for Violet's daughters, but it's the example of what the cooperative members in the Living Compassion Cooperative are doing that's having an effect on other folks around them. And we were just thinking, God, that's so the way Sangha works here for us, that we support each other and we begin to model for each other a possibility. And even, we were talking about it earlier today, even what it models for us is that we become a community. Sangha is a community in a way that you could say that community is lacking in our culture in general, and I project that's one of the things that us Americans see in African cultures, is that we're drawn to that sense of community that exists in Africa that does not so much exist here. And it feels like that coming together around supporting the cooperative in Cantalomba has been a way for us as a community here in the United States to come together. And again, just as the folks in Cantalomba are modeling possibility for each other, that's what we're doing here for each other as well.
Amen, sister. Yes, I see it as you're talking. I see that in practice when we come to the monastery or workshop or we're in the presence of the guide or the monks or people who've practiced, we get a sense of what's possible for us.
Yeah.
In a way that we can't see when we're stuck in some story.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one other tiny example that Teresa was telling us is, and it's actually not tiny at all, but, you know, so all the roofs leak in the winter, in the rainy season. And so it rains, and normally what people do is, well, okay, it's raining, and, you know, good. Just there's nothing I can do, basically. It's just kind of hopeless. And even just having some new roofs in the community, Teresa was telling us, has spurred people to do stuff like, all right, well, let me see if I can get some plastic to put over my roof so that it doesn't leak. So that, I mean, it just somehow creates that, well, okay, actually there are steps that I can take. There are things I can do. And that's, I thought of that, Michael, when you were just saying, you know, we go to the monastery and it's like we grow from the work that each other is doing as well. We're inspired by that. We overcome the things that seem like we can't overcome them, that seem like obstacles that we can't overcome, and we do. We see, well, if he can do it, why can't I? If she can do it, so can I.
Yes, there's a tremendous ripple effect.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Fascinating. Anything else you'd like to tell me about community and all of our listeners?
Well, in general, what I can say is that it's an exchange of culture. Living Compassion is bringing ideas into our heads, putting that empty bottle I talked about, just trying to fill it up. And we, in exchange, we are showing Living Compassion how we live in a community. That way, I think we are exchanging.
I can't top that, Michael.
Can't top that. We all have something to give.
We all have something to give. Yep.
Jen, Teresa, thanks so much for joining us tonight. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Teresa. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, good afternoon, Sherry.
Good evening, good afternoon to you.
How are you?
Good. That was very fun.
That was fun.
You know what I love? I love a lot about that conversation. I love a lot about that organization and that work and all of that stuff. But I just love the idea of Teresa coming over here, being at the monastery in all of that quiet, having time to rest and read.
That's great.
Isn't that good?
It's great.
I mean, we all, you know, we probably, most of us could use that kind of time out from our regular life to just be in the silence and the solitude and check in on some inspiring words and that sort of thing. And I just love it that she's here doing that.
Yes, and such a place exists where you can go to do that.
Uh-huh, yep. And that Cantalomba exists as a place that where we can go and see people who appear to be living a very different life from ours, and then in exactly the way that Teresa and Jen were talking about, begin to have this growing understanding of how very much alike we are and how each one of us has something unique to offer, something that everybody else needs. We each have that, whatever that is, to bring to the whole, and to be in a place that seems so very, very different and realize, wow, we creatures are much, 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 much more alike than we are different. And for me, one of the powerful next steps with that is, okay, if that's true with us people, if no matter how where somebody's living or how they live or how they look or what they're doing with their day, you know, if essentially we are all the same and that we want to feel that our lives matter and that we want to care and be cared about and, you know, all of those kinds of things that we share as human beings, then maybe that's just how life is. Maybe that's true for creatures too. Maybe they are not as different from us as we think. And we begin to look and we realize, wow, you know, most creatures seem to have a lot of the same things going that we have. They want to participate. They want to, you know, they want to take care of their young. They want to make life work in whatever way that is for their particular place in things. And then we can just expand that on out to everything in life seems to share that those same qualities of having a place here, having a unique contribution, something that without that unique contribution, everything is diminished.
Wow.
I like it.
I like it too. It really, to me, what you're pointing at is really that illusion of separation that conditioning is always trying to.
Yeah, and how we just see it break down.
Yes, yes. And what I love about Teresa being here, as you talked about, is really that the idea that we're all so similar, it's not theoretical. You know,
no.
We can talk to Teresa. We hear it from her directly.
Exactly.
you know?
Exactly. She says exactly the kinds of things that we say that we care about in our lives. She's talking about exactly the same thing in her life and in the lives of the other people in Cantalomba. And so, I mean, we can extrapolate. I mean, we're pretty as close to opposite sides of the world as, you know, people want to get. So
yes.
if we can see this in one another, well, who are we going to leave out, for goodness sakes? Who are we going to say, oh, yeah, but, you know, you're probably really different from us. And, you know, we just probably, there's probably no common ground or,
right.
And the sad things that happen in the world because people do believe that differences are really real, that they exist and that they're unbridgeable in some way. And as you say, you know, that's ego's primary focus is getting people to believe that that's true. You know, I'm so different from everybody else. I'm so unusual, and you're really different from me, and you could just never understand me, and I certainly don't understand you, and, you know, that the twain is never going to meet.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Wonderful.
Yeah. It's a good thing.
Sherry, we have some callers here.
Let's find out what they're up to.
Yay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Sherry. This is Jen.
Hey, Jen.
Hi.
Hello. It's so wonderful to hear Teresa. I'm so happy that she made it.
Isn't that a good thing?
It is a great thing. It's so exciting.
Yeah. it's almost unreal, isn't it?
It is.
You know, yeah. We're just so used to her being there. And
yeah.
Now to think, you know, like for me, well, she's just down the road.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful.
Yeah. So what's going on in your life, young lady?
Oh, so I was calling. Actually, I've been looking at a little bit of kind of some stuff that I think I was catching on to, and some of it kind of, I think I got a chance to sort of see some of the process when I was in Africa. So, wow, I noticed, like, conditioning doesn't even want me to speak. I saw that it was sort of like there were two different experiences. Like, there was the person who just felt so amazed and grateful and excited to get to be there, and to kind of a surreal thing, too, to really get to be in Cantalomba and see these amazing things. And then there kind of was while I was there, and then since I've left, there's also this kind of experience of how much conditioning is trying to layer stuff over the heart to not let me be with that experience.
Yes. Yes. And what are you seeing about that? Like, what kinds of layers, layered look have you got going at this point?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, it's actually really interesting to see, because I'm kind of getting how, you know, like you said, with whatever layered look, how it's doing that to me all the time, no matter what life experience I'm in. I think just Africa was so big that I really noticed, whoa, there's a big disconnect here. What's going on? But, it's just sort of typical stuff. I mean, different stories about, you know, just what about this? It should be that. And then, you know, in the separation, what you were just speaking about, you know, like it was almost as my time in Cantalomba went on, there was more and more opportunity for conditioning to say, everyone else is having the right experience. They're inspired to do a project. They're having heart-opening moments, and you're not doing it. You know, even though that wasn't actually so, like there were many, many heart-opening experiences, but they were just so quickly, like, jumped on by conditioning with just the general junk that it captures to try to, I mean, it seemed compelling and real and all that, but the more that I've had some distance with it, I can see how I can get caught up in, oh, there was this and there was that, and I can get so much energy around it, but I'm kind of getting, it was all just to keep me from this amazing, I mean, I've dreamed about going to Africa since I was a young adult. I, you know, spent all my money and then some money that I didn't have. I mean, it was a big chance for the heart, I think, to go. And so it feels like conditioning was just all over that too, you know?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And I think we can all recognize a process that for ourselves in what you're talking about, that it's like the bigger the deal, the harder conditioned mind works. The harder ego has to fight against it to keep us from actually being able to take in and acknowledge for ourselves that this has been big. This has been life-changing. This is significant. So, you know, it just talks louder and faster to try to convince us that, as you say, you're not having the right experience. Everybody else is. There's really something wrong with you. You should be more this or that or something else. And if you could see it in someone else, if you could see what it's doing to you being done to someone else, I think the thing that would really catch your attention is, wow, it gets really frenetic.
Mm. Yeah.
And it is, because it's trying to plug up such big holes.
Yeah. Yes, that's what it really feels like that. Like I said, when I finally actually sat down and I did a little bit of writing to just kind of put out there all these different stories that were churning and whatever was going on, and it was kind of like sitting in meditation, and I've had the experience of, you know, like a big story come up, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do, you know, all this kind of blah, blah, blah stuff that comes up, and it was like I could see like that, you know, big cyclone just whip in of how much energy there was, and yeah, it completely makes sense that it had to have that much energy to keep pulling my attention away from this just amazing place that I was in and thing that was happening.
And of course, as you know, as we know, as we have to keep coming back to endlessly, there's no solution except go away. You are not the authority on my life. No, I'm sorry. Nobody gets to tell me what I experienced or what this meant to me or whether my heart is open or closed. I'm sorry. I'm the authority here. It really does. It really does come down to that.
Yeah. That's good to hear. You know, it's been tricky because now coming back, you know, everybody wants to know the experience, and I've kind of just been wrestling a little with like looking at what was going on and what this conditioning stuff was, and then also looking at what was there, and it's been tricky to kind of see some of this process without self-hate, because of course when I first started to see like, wow, that's what was going on, some of the times when I didn't sort of have the experience that I might have expected I would have, it was when conditioning was just, you know, doing these crazy things.
Oh, of course. Keeping you from having the experience that you would have had if it weren't keeping you from having the experience.
Exactly. And it was hard a little, you know, I don't know, somebody feels that it was hard to see that without launching into the next.
Oh, of course.
Oh, my God, you idiot. You have this huge chance to go to Africa, and you know, part of it was conditioning.
What occurs to me about that, Jen, and, you know, you can try this and then let me know if it works. But any time that starts, go to an experience that you had that was real. In other words, go to holding, I wish I could, Deborah?
Deborah, yeah.
Yeah, go to holding Deborah. Go to...
Arian Smile.
Go to walking into, through the gates and into the little compound there. Go to the tuck shop and, you know, go to the new plumbing in the building, you know, whatever it is. But go to something that's a real, you know, see the women in their new sewing room. Go to something that is a real experience for you. Not a conversation about how you should feel about that real experience, but to go to something very concrete.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Go to pictures if you have pictures. Mm-hmm. You know, pull out the pictures, and begin to take the attention away from it, trying to take your attention away from your experience, and give your attention back to the experience. Because it, in practice, of course, that really is what we're doing. Now, of course, I'm encouraging you to do it through pictures and memories and that sort of thing. But it's the same process of turning your attention away from that conversation and back to something that is real and tangible and exists. And it doesn't require any story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great place to practice with, because I can feel the shift in my body and everything else when you bring that up, just going to the real experience and dropping all the, you know, all the evaluating and
exactly,
you know, all the there. Yeah.
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 So it really is the equivalent of, you know, we'll talk about just look at a tree. Just turn your attention to the bird singing. Look at a cloud in the sky. Look at, you know, just get to something, in quotes, real, you know, rather than in that conversation with somebody about what you're doing wrong with something that's real. So you turn your attention to what you're seeing, and there, it doesn't require a conversation because you are seeing that, and you have to leave seeing that in order to give your attention to that conversation about how you don't see things as clearly as other people see them, or whatever it is.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and then let us know, because that could have value.
Yeah, I can see how it. Like I said, it's been a process that I do all the time in day to day life. Let alone that I really got to see that I did in Africa. So just, you know, working with that all the time is
Great. Well, and that's why it's really important for us to do increasingly outrageous things. Because the more we allow conditioned mind to keep us in what would be called our comfort zone, which is just utter hogwash. But we all kind of begin to strike bargains with the devil, you know, where, okay, I won't step out of this little rut that I'm in. And so don't beat me too badly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And instead, what we want to do is jump over the edge of that rut and just take off running and let it try to catch us. Because when we do that, it's the experience that you're describing. Everything just goes up so many notches. You know, all the colors get so many. You can't not see it. You can't not recognize it for what it is, because conditioning gets so blatant in its attempt to reel us back in. And so if you can keep being outrageous and audacious, then it has to work so hard that it's really revealing itself in ways that are glaring and extremely helpful to oneself.
Yeah, I think that was, the disconnect was so big. It was like, no, you know, it wasn't. So it was definitely revealing this everything with
perspective. Yeah, and it's, you know, we can get to that place of, oh my God, you know, this conditioning is huge. Okay, good. It doesn't have anything to do with me. You know, I just want to know what I'm up against. So it's kind of like, you know, my bank, wow, they really are a bunch of crooks. Now, I could say it is just too scary to think that these big corporations that I have to do business with are crooks. So I'm just going to pretend I don't know that. Or I could say, you know, it's really helpful to know that.
Yeah, to know what you're,
and know what you're up against.
Yeah, can I just say, too, like, the one, I know it's just a story, but it has been, I just don't know quite what to do with it because it really gets me. The one thing is, like, you didn't contribute anything. You didn't do a project. You didn't, you know, create new tiling for the, I don't know, and it keeps going.
Well,
like,
here's
really
the deal, Jan. It's not too late.
I don't get you.
Well, it's not too late. I mean, Cantaloupe's still there and you're not dead.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So what you might decide to do might be something that grows out of your trip rather than that you did something in particular while you were there. I didn't do anything either, if you noticed. So, but what being there does for me is inspire me to keep on doing.
Yes, I think that's why I really wanted to look at this, because I think that's been the next piece, like looking at what might come out of this for me, absolutely, whether, you know, fundraising or whatever. It's like everything, all the energy has been stuck because I couldn't quite see, like, what the heck was going on. And now kind of seeing how conditioning had all of that stuck, I do see that there's a potential to free it up. I've had a really hard time with that one voice of you didn't do, you know, whatever.
Yeah, so your response to it is, yet. You might also point out all the things that you have done.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, not, would not be an inconsiderable list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
We'll have many things to look at and some energy that can be freed up to
participate.
So that's
to do audacious, outrageous things.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Michael. Bye.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Jen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to have a sponsor break, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by VoiceBusters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
That is one funny human.
Yeah. That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Easy to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Stop, drop, and breathe.
Stop, drop, and breathe.
Great. It's great.
Mm-hmm. It's a good bumper sticker. It's a good T-shirt. You can put it on your coffee cup.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
A good conversation starter, too.
Yes.
What in the heck does that mean?
Yes.
Then
and I love bringing the humor into practice because
uh-huh.
conditioning just goes bonkers over that.
Because conditioning has absolutely no sense of humor whatsoever.
Yeah.
Which is why it's always projecting that awareness practice is not fun.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Wow. Wow.
Hmm.
We have some more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there? Are you there? Okay, we'll go to the next one. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Wow, Michael. Is it just going to be you and me?
Hello?
Ah! There we go.
Are you there?
This is Beth.
This is who?
This is Beth.
Hey, Beth. What's going on?
Well, Pittsburgh's a pretty interesting place to be right now.
Is that so?
The G20, Peace Summit.
Uh-huh.
Kind of happening here. Lots and lots of drama.
Is that so? I tend to miss drama, so do you want to fill us in?
Well, I don't watch the news, but it kind of like everywhere I go, people want to tell me about these protesters that are coming to town.
Uh-huh. And what are they protesting? Peace?
I have no idea.
Uh-huh. Well, that peace is a dangerous thing, you know.
Yeah, well, I think it, I have no idea.
Uh-huh. We don't want to know. We're just going to be peaceful.
Yes, and a peace, world peace. Kind
exactly.
Of.
In the right order there, huh?
Yeah, but it's kind of something you just said that really broke through some stuff for me was that conditioning has no sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
And I've been finding that I haven't had much of a sense of humor. Things have been pretty serious.
Doggone. So that's kind of a little clue about where you might have been living, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's kind of like I have Dharma. I have teachings. But that's not the same as breaking through.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, in fact, you know, let's see how to say this. You know, having ideas that go around in conditioned mind about how things work can often just turn into how you should be that you're not.
Somebody else in my life situation will be having the same situation. That's the one that was today's new one.
Oh, okay. So anybody else in these same circumstances would be having a different life experience than you're having?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Well, that's great. Now, did you ask that person how they know that? Because that is an amazing perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah? I mean, because, first of all,
it's my fault.
There isn't anybody else in these circumstances. So
right.
How could we possibly know how they would be responding? We can't know how.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to go all the way back to birth as far as.
Well, and it's not possible. So they, you know, the voice should just come right out and say what it means. There's something wrong with you.
Yeah, there is.
that's what it's saying. It's just afraid if it says it that directly, you'll catch on to who's talking to you.
Yes.
You know, speaking of the news, that kind of statement would do well on a lot of, again, my fingers are making those little quote marks in the air. That would do well on a lot of news broadcasts. You know, anybody else in your same circumstances would be having a completely different experience than the one that you're having. I could just hear some news broadcaster making that statement and everybody going, yeah, yeah, boy, that's true.
Well, it just seems so obvious.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, until we stop for a second and consider it. Yeah, I mean, when you're inside your head listening to it, the person who's saying it is talking to somebody who believes it, so it just sounds just obviously true and so.
Okay,
and then,
well, this is kind of...
Go ahead.
Kind of the thing that I mean, it's kind of like when I called in, I just know I want help breaking through. And I know that it's conditioning, and I know that that it's just so real.
Until you hear somebody like me reflect it back, and then.
You know, right now, I'm kind of. I mean, I'm aware. I mean, it's like that when I heard you say, you know, the conditioning has no sense of humor. There was a point of, like, a little crack, and then it's like my mind took it over, and kind of fit it into the Dharma log.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It just takes that new piece of information because that piece of information is really threatening to it. So you can just practically watch it start scrambling around, right? Okay, all right. Well, how can we use this against her?
Well, it's not funny, so therefore it's your fault.
Right, right. Right. If you're not having fun, then There's the proof that we've been looking for, that there's something wrong with you.
But, you know, it does also seem to be true that the farther you go, the harder it gets.
Oh, only to a certain point. No, I actually...
Well,
you know,
I think I've been to the point...
I can't actually agree with that at anywhere, anywhere along the continuum. I really can't. Because, you know, we look back to a time when we knew absolutely nothing, and we look back primarily through conditioned mind, and we say, oh, what, life was much easier back there when I was completely...
No, I don't believe that.
Yeah, good. So what happens is...
A lot of my old demons have been...
Exorcised.
Exorcised.
Yeah. So you go along, and what happens now is there's so much more awareness of where you are. Yeah?
Yes.
And so it feels, the voices would tell you that feels worse.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a... Yeah. And I know that, you know, it's kind of like, it's just kind of the way of the world right now, and that kind of trying to operate without money.
Uh-huh.
So it's like the situations, and it's kind of like more is required of me because I don't have money to just solve the problem.
Yes. Yes. However, that's just the new content. The rules have always been exactly the same. When you're identified with egocentric karmic conditioning, life is miserable and suffering. I don't care if you have all the money in the world. Okay. And when you are disidentified, it doesn't matter what your life circumstances are. Even if
that's
you don't
true.
Have any money at all.
Right. Well, you know, the story that I've been kind of, you know, coming up with the money to go on retreat. And it's like the money keeps going for tires and, you know, things to keep me surviving.
Uh-huh.
It's the story that I was kind of working with.
Well, you know, here's my experience of it, and you can just play with this for yourself and see what is so. The story will always find a way to maintain itself as long as I believe it and am supporting it. As soon as I don't believe it and don't support it, then life circumstances begin to shift. What conditioning wants us to believe is that first, you know, for people like us, you know, with other people, they've got their own, it's got its own way of doing this. But what it would say to, say, you, is you need to get yourself together.
Yes.
And then you'll be able to disidentify.
And there's no humor there.
Oh, God, no. And there's no way it's ever going to happen either.
Yeah, and what you're saying about keeping it going is I can see that I believe that.
Yes. Well, the person...
I buy into it. It's not as much
the
as I
person who,
believe it.
Who identifies with egocentric karmic conditioning. Now, if you consider... So I got my right hand over here to the side. You know what it's doing. It's going around a little circle over there. Okay. So you've got the voice... The conditioned voice that's talking to the conditioned ears. Okay, so they're in that conversation. Well, you know, there's not enough money. Well, I know, and the economy stinks, and what are you going to do? And then I really want to go on retreat. I know you do, but then, you know, the car needs tires, and then there's no work, and then the money goes for this, and then I get mugged, and then, you know, and it never leaves that little sphere of egocentric karmic conditioning.
they're here right now in this moment. It's willingness, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And the thing here's the deal, Beth. We cannot make liberation, awareness practice, waking up, ending suffering. We cannot put that into a conditioned reality and hope that it's going to turn into something other than a conditioned reality because it has all the proper buzzwords.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been trapped there for a little while.
Well, you're probably not alone in that. But the point of it is we have to get to the place where we say liberation regardless of the circumstances. I choose to be free right now. I don't want, no conversation. We're not going there. I choose peace and freedom. I choose liberation. I choose ending suffering. That is my choice. That's where I'm turning my attention. That's what I'm doing right now. Well, but what? Nope. Because leaving where I want to be to go over there and solve imaginary problems so that I can then get to where I want to be is not a good life strategy.
It hasn't worked yet.
No. And don't feel bad. You're not the only one for whom it has not worked. It will never work. It will never work for anyone. It doesn't work. It's the equivalent of attempting to go there in order to get here. The only way
yes.
to get here is to go here.
Yes.
Yeah. There is never going to lead to here.
Yes. Okay.
Good. Now you've disidentified. There. That feels better.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
of course, what it does immediately is start the campaign, start the conversation.
And
because we have such a habit of being in conversation with those voices and thinking that they're real and wanting to be special to somebody, and God knows they will, want to be your most intimate relationship 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I realize, I get it, that it is really scary for people to attempt to drop that relationship, being the only relationship they've ever actually known. Yeah?
Yes. Yes, it is.
And yet we have to do it. It is the price of the ticket.
I feel that deeply.
Hmm?
I feel that deeply.
Yeah.
It's not a casual thing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let us know how it goes, huh?
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. Take care. Stay away from those peace activities. They sound dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Even when the police show up.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take another sponsor break, and then we'll be back for a couple more callers.
All right. Thank you.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of joy?
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
You know, Michael, before we find out who that next caller is.
Yes.
Simply Celebrate.
Now,
there's a lifetime of wisdom in those two little words. Simply Celebrate. That's the whole deal right there. And, of course, what conditioned mind would have us believe is that you can only celebrate certain things down the road, somewhere else, at another time.
Very conditional.
Completely conditional, that it has to be different from this, special, extraordinary. I'll need to be a different person. I'll need to be doing different things. And certainly I can't celebrate just a regular moment. Yet, if we did, oh my goodness, how different the world would be.
In a hurry.
Yeah. That's a good reminder.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Sherry. Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Well, hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Rebecca.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi.
What's going on?
I got to tell you, this. I found this author that you pointed me to, Brenda Uhland. She is fabulous.
Isn't she amazing?
Yeah.
I've noticed we've had a few peace quotes from our Brenda.
Yeah, that's, well, you know, and I think, you know, next to you, she is like the most unpretentious, clear writer, you know, it's just fabulous. And she's inspired me, and, well, actually, I've been wanting to write for some time, and I got just inspired by her, this book, If You Want to Write.
Uh-huh.
And last night, I stumbled onto something after my little key group that was about, I tried writing with my non-dominant hand, and not, you know, it was, and just this stuff that I've been trying to put into words for months, I mean months and months and months, going on to years, just started flowing. And I realized that it was because, because I was slowing down enough to let this, it was like I tapped into this part of me that I had never really had gotten access to in some way.
Uh-huh.
And,
like magic, isn't it?
Yeah. So I just had these three glorious hours of writing, and got up this morning and did it, wrote some more, and felt kind of euphoric all day. And because I just felt like I had tapped into this dream. So I came home tonight all excited, getting ready to do it again, and read what I had written. And, you know, the same person was not there this time. I kind of crashed.
Wait. So you came home, and instead of continuing writing, you read what you had written before preparation for writing? Or?
Yeah, I was continuing the same piece, and I was kind of reading, kind of get back, you know, you take a sort of a running leap at it. I was kind of going back, seeing where I had been, and was going to continue this piece that I'm working on. Uh-huh. But it was like conditioning was the one reading.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of a downer.
Uh-huh. And it wanted to tell you everything that was wrong with it. And
Yeah, and how it really wasn't that great after all, and oh my God, what this means, and I could kind of sense this part of me that was like blocking all the criticism from coming in, you know, like nope, we're not gonna let this beautiful little enthusiastic writer get dumped on like this. We're just not gonna do it. So I put the paper away, you know, I just put it away and just stopped the conversation and went and did something else. And then it came time for the radio program, and I tell you, when I heard that the Voices campaign, the Voices public service announcement had stopped, it was just impossible to stay identified with that that critical conditioning while that was on. It just cracks me up.
Uh-huh.
And so it was just a perfect little, and then to hear Beth talk about humor, you know, I mean, it was just a really nice little disidentifying thing.
Yeah. And, you know, yes, very good to all of that. And one of the things that I'm hoping you'll try, because that you just want to get used to that little process that happened, right? Because anytime we open up in that way, anytime there's something that we love in that way, you know,
mm-hmm.
strict karmic conditioning is going to just jump on that with both feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Try to destroy it, try to ruin it for you. And so next time it happens, ask that little writer to write about how you should approach that hateful criticism.
Mm. Wow, yeah, that's really great.
It's like writing, excuse me, it's like writing through a writer's block.
Uh-huh.
People will get blocked and they stop. Well, gosh, that was the point. So instead of stopping, to just write about everything that's going on in that blocked state, and pretty soon conditioning can't maintain itself against that and it falls away. And well, you just shoot out of that eddy and right back into the current.
Hmm. Yeah, and it occurs to me that what I did in kind of this defensive posture was I sort of like shoved this little writer behind me like I was her shield and said, no, just get away to conditioning. And what you're suggesting is more like taking her by the hand and going through this kind of storm as a team.
Yes, and not that your approach was bad. I mean, it was certainly beat the heck out of just letting her, you know, be abused.
Yeah.
And what I'm suggesting, even more than going through it as a team, is letting her give you the way through this.
Mm.
Because, because I think that she has wisdom for you.
Mm-hmm.
And what we assume is that I, whoever I is, am the one best able to be in charge.
Yeah.
And yet what you've seen in doing this project with her is that she has a lot of the clarity and wisdom, and I don't know what words you would use to describe what she's bringing to you, but she's the source of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that feels really right on.
Yeah. So let her take on that challenge of what do you do when hateful voices come at you?
Mm.
You know, if you were doing anything, if you're writing, okay, if you were acting, if you were singing, if you were dancing, if you were giving speeches, if you were, you know, walking around in the world practically, you know that you're going to encounter criticism.
Yeah.
From the mm-hmm. outside, it's almost never as devastating, or it's not as bad as what our conditioning will do to us. But when the person outside, the external critic, matches up with internal,
mm-hmm.
then it's really devastating. So somebody like a performer has to get to the point of being able not to be incapacitated by somebody else's projections.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. You know, as you're saying that, I'm remembering that while this was happening, I was kind of sitting on the cushion and just watching this. And I remember I asked her, that part of me, it was kind of like, what do you want me to do when this comes in? What do you know? And then it kind of got all jumbled up in who was whom. You know, it kind of slid around, I think, in some identities maybe, because it just felt like I just don't want to go through this by myself was what the message was. And I really don't know who I was in all this. You know, it just felt all slippery.
But that's the beauty of the writing. It's actually much easier to have a sense of who's who.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's just happening inside your head and different voices are coming up and talking and responding to or reacting to feelings and that sort of thing, it
mm-hmm.
is hard to tell who's who. But with the writing, much clearer.
Yeah, it really is. And as soon as that pen gets put in my dominant hand, I know there's somebody else here, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like, wait a minute, I didn't decide to do that.
Yeah.
My thing with that is, you know, I'll be out running and then all of a sudden I'm walking. It's like,
uh-huh.
wait a minute, I didn't decide to stop running.
I can relate to that. I did that
yeah.
too. With running. Yeah.
Yeah. So all of a sudden I'm writing with my, how did that happen? It was a tape over there.
I snatched that pen out of my hand.
Right.
Oh, that's great.
You know, another thing, since we're on this, and hopefully it'll be something other people might want to play with, but you can get different writing implements so that different parts of you can write in different, you know, with different things.
Oh, that's a cool idea. Oh, yeah, I can just see this. I mean, the just as you're saying that, this little teenager part of me just kind of jumped up and latched onto that idea. That's going to be fun to experiment with.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, well, all right, you and Brenda, sounds like you're off for a good time.
That's right. We're in this now. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have about 4 minutes left, and we have one more caller here.
Perfect.
Oh, who just disappeared? Well, let me try another one here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself? Not there. Okay. Sherry, I have an email question here, and we have a couple minutes.
Great.
Okay. Hi, I'm in need of serious help. I have tried analysis and antidepressants since 1968 to no avail. My former yoga teacher led me to an encounter with your work. I'm 62 and despise my body. I'm big and fat, and my gender, male. I'm in the process of killing myself by being morbidly obese and not exercising. With respect.
That's it? That's it?
That's it.
Did I miss a question in there?
Well, the first sentence was, I'm in need of serious help.
Yeah, but I didn't hear a question. I just heard information.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I would say, you know, when he wants to do something different from that, then there will probably be a question attached to an email.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. It's so, I mean, we can all, I think, identify with this. You know, I hate this. I hate that. I hate my body. I hate my gender. You know, and I mean, in my mind, I'm just, who are you? Who are you? And could the real person please get a voice?
Yeah.
You know, could we just have a moment of all of that illusion of separation shutting up so that whoever is trapped inside all of that could have a chance to be seen and heard?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so sad because when I hear that, you know, it just sounds like, you know, such a commitment on the part of self-hate to kill this person.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't even get a sense from that. It can almost sound like, and that's who wrote the email.
Yeah.
You know, I hate this person and I'm going to kill them.
Yes.
So maybe if that person is listening in, he'll, you know, get a hold of the keyboard and the email account and send in something on what it's like to be the recipient of all of that hatred.
Yes.
Because
yes.
I, you know, we all know there's a little boy in there who is receiving, being the recipient of all of that hatred, who really, really, really does not deserve it and desperately give help.
Yes, indeed. And I can hear in your response clarifying what it is that's going on, you know, with the self-hatred there, talking to that young part who seems to be really believing it.
Yeah, yeah. And really trapped.
And really trapped.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
I know I sometimes, like people spend extended periods of time with me, I can watch them, you know, kind of start rolling their eyes when I correct their language. You know,
yeah.
I hate my gender. Well, no, no. Self-hate hates my gender.
Yes.
That voice hates my body. That voice, that self-hatred hates this person and would like to destroy this person. Is attempting to destroy this person. I'm not doing it.
Yes, getting clear about what's actually going on.
Yeah, yeah, because if I'm doing it, well, what a sick puppy I am. Let's just give up on me.
Yes.
But that's not what's going on. The person who is receiving that abuse is not the one doing it. And that's just such a critical understanding to have. And all of our conditioning, our language, just leads us right down that path of, you see what you're doing, you see what you're doing to yourself, why are you doing that? What is the matter? Look, there really is something wrong with you that you're doing that to yourself. And that's just not what's going on.
Yeah.
As real as if, you know, I were beating on you and saying, look what you're doing to yourself. Look what you're doing to yourself. You know, I mean, at some point, you know, maybe you would say, but wait a minute. You know, you're doing it. I'm not doing it. But it's so hard to get when it's all happening inside a person's head.
Yes. And when you lay it out like that about how it's actually working, we can begin to see the possibility there that is initially not available to us at all.
Yeah, because how long would it take a person to come up with that on their own?
Yes.
To, I mean, when you've been told over and over, when the conditioning is so deep, this is how it works, this is what's going on, this is how it works, this is what's going on, to stop and say, wait a minute, what if that's not true? That's just not something that most of us are equipped to do, which is the blessing of practice. So 2,500 years ago, the Buddha sat down and through whatever combination of miracles saw how things worked. He told somebody how it worked, who told somebody, who told somebody, who told somebody, who told lots of somebodies, let's face it, until it made it all the way down to us. And what a gift, what a blessing that, in fact, we do have the opportunity to know that something other than that conditioning, that self-hate, is available to us, that there's another possibility, because that's what, you know, that's a huge part of what makes the Buddha, in my mind, so remarkable, to see something that is so taboo, you know, something that we are just not meant to see, which is how life works.
Yes. So big thanks all around then.
Yeah, and I hope that that person does hear this and will write back in or call, which would be an even better way.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that might take a little while to build up to that. But I'll go up against those voices. I'll fight for him. No question in my mind.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry. And I'd like to thank everyone who called in today, everyone who listened today, everyone who will listen to this. We had a great Good News Update. And you, Sherry, your big willingness and commitment, I'm most grateful for that.
And I for yours. So all the way around.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry.
Michael. Good night.
Good night.